Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
It's good to be back.
Today, we're heading into the source material on the Afrin district up in northern Syria. We're trying to piece together its history, especially the story of its Aramean-descended communities and Christian faith.
And specifically looking at the time before 2011, before things changed so drastically.
Exactly, because the sources, they present us with a real a kind of puzzle.
Right. You have this region, Afrin, with incredibly deep historical roots, tangible archaeology, connecting it to ancient Arameans, to Syriac Christians.
You can literally see it in the ground.
Yeah. But then, right before 2010, the Christian community there was, well, numerically very small. How does that square? That's the core question we found in the sources.
So we'll be looking at reports, historical accounts, archaeological findings, trying to pull out the key threads from these sources to understand that. That historical situation. What was Afrin like then?
And to really get a handle on that, you have to start way back with the ancient roots, the Arameans.
Okay. So who were they, according to the sources?
Well, the sources describe them as a Semitic-speaking people. Probably started out as semi-nomadic pastoralists living in the Syrian steppe, northern Mesopotamia.
And they show up in records quite early, don't they? Like 2nd, 3rd millennium BCE.
Yeah, there are early mentions, but they really come onto the scene, you know, make their mark after the big Late Bronze Age collapse around 1200 BCE.
When the big empires were weakening.
Exactly. The Aramean tribes were mobile, adaptable. They started taking over existing cities, founding new centers.
But the sources say they weren't like one unified empire.
No, not at all. That's a key point. They were more decentralized, organized into these tribal kingdoms or entities, often called Bit Something, you know, House of X.
Okay.
Like Bitadini near the Euphrates.
Okay.
Or Bitagusi around Arpad, Samal, which is modern Dinzin, Sirli, Hoyerkamoth, around Damascus. These were significant players. By the 9th century BCE, the sources suggest Aramean rulers really dominated the political landscape of ancient Syria.
Dominant, but still fragmented. And you said this ancient political setup, it has echoes later on.
It seems to, according to the sources, this pattern of, let's say, regional loyalties or divisions among the Aramean kingdoms, it kind of sets a precedent.
Yeah.
Later, when Christianity spreads, it moves into communities that already have these distinct regional identities.
And church structures sometimes follow those lines.
Often, yeah. Mm. Bishoprics might align with older tribal areas. And then later theological debates, big ones like after the Council of Chalcedon in 451 CE, they further cemented differences between groups, leading to separate churches, Syriac Orthodox, Maronite Church of the East. The sources see this deep history of fragmentation as relevant background for understanding modern identities.
Right. So their political power was spread out, eventually declined. But what was their biggest, most lasting impact?
Oh, language. Definitely Aramaic. The sources really emphasized their alphabetic script. It was simple, adaptable.
And then they wrote it on stuff like parchment or papyrus, not just clay tablets.
Exactly. Which made it super portable, practical for administration, trade, everything.
So it spread like wildfire.
Pretty much. It wasn't just their language anymore. Empires started using it. The Neo-Assyrians, the Neo-Babylonians, and especially the Achaemenid Persians, they made a standardized form, Imperial Aramaic, the official language, across their huge empire.
Wow. From Egypt to India, basically.
That's the picture the sources paint. It became the common tongue, lingua franca of the whole Near East for centuries. It influenced Hebrew, Persian, even Arabic later on.
And it's in the Bible and the language Jesus spoke.
Parts of the Hebrew Bible, yes, Daniel and Ezra. And yeah, it's widely accepted. Aramaic was the everyday language of Judea in the first century. So the language of Jesus and his disciples, that linguistic footprint is just immense. It cemented the Aramean cultural DNA long after their kingdoms faded.
Okay, so that's the Aramean foundation. What's the next big shift described in the sources, bringing us closer to Afrin's story?
That would be Christianization. Starting in the first century CE and over the next few hundred years, Christianity gradually took root in these Aramean lands, including areas like northern Syria.
Replacing the older beliefs, like the storm god Hadad.
Yes, the sources mention the old polytheism, gods like Hadad, gradually fading as people converted. And as they converted, their language, Aramaic, was adapted.
Ah, and this is where Syriac comes in.
Precisely. One particular Aramaic dialect, the one spoken in Edessa, became highly influential. It evolved into what we call classical Syriac. This became the language for Christian theology, literature, liturgy.
And the Bible translation, the Peshitta?
A cornerstone achievement, yes. Written in Syriac.
But the name itself, Syriac, where did that actually come from? It wasn't what they originally called themselves, was it?
No, the sources are quite specific here. The name came from outside, mainly from the Greeks. The Greeks used Syria, derived from Assyria, to refer to the whole Levant region.
And then they called the people living there Syrioi, Syrians or Syriacs.
Exactly. Even though the people themselves used a different name. The sources point to several ancient writers who explicitly state this.
Like who?
Well, Poseidonios, back in the 2nd century BCE, apparently wrote something like, "The people we Greeks call Syriacs, they call themselves Arameans." That's pretty direct.
And Strabo quoted him. Then Josephus, in the 1st century CE, linked the biblical figure Aram to the Arameans, which the Greeks called Syriacs. Eusebius, in the 4th century, said the same thing.
So, multiple sources confirming the Greeks used Syriac for people who identified as Aramean.
Right. And over time, the sources suggest the Christian Arameans themselves started to adopt the term. The Aramaic version, Syriogo or Syriea, became a kind of synonym for their original name, Oromoio.
Why adopt an external name?
It was likely tied to the geography and the influence of major Christian centers like Antioch, which was in the Roman province of Syria. It became a way to identify as Christians from that region.
And their own writers acknowledge this connection.
Yes. St. Ephrem, who's often called the Syrian, referred to his homeland as Aram-Naran and its people as Arameans, but he himself became known by the regional term. Much later, Patriarch Michael the Great in the 12th century wrote explicitly, the Arameans Oromoi, namely the descendants of Aram who are called Syrians, so there was a conscious link being made. It's fascinating. A name given by others gets adopted, becomes tied to faith, but still carries that older Aramean history within it.
And that layering of identity is really important when we look at the modern situation described in the sources.
Because today, these terms, Aramean, Syriac, Syrian, they aren't straightforward synonyms. There's debate.
A significant debate, yes. The sources outline different perspectives within the community itself. There's what's called the Arameanist view.
Okay. What's that?
This view, strongly represented in some sources, holds that Aramean is the original correct ethnic or national name. Syriac is seen as a valid term for their language and culture, a kind of synonym that arose with Christianity.
And terms like Assyrian or Chaldean.
From that Arameanist perspective, those are often viewed as later misnomers, maybe introduced partly by Western missionaries, which unfortunately created divisions within what they see as one Aramean nation.
Okay. And the other main perspective?
The Assyrianist view. This perspective, also discussed in the sources, emphasizes a direct, unbroken ethnic and cultural connection back to the ancient Assyrian Empire in Mesopotamia.
So they see Syria and Syriac as derived from Assyria.
Yes, linguistically derived.
Mm.
This view is quite strong among members of the Church of the East and the Chaldean Catholic Church, but others hold it too. They see themselves as essentially Assyrians who adopted Christianity and the Aramaic Syriac language over time.
It's complex. The sources don't pick a side, do they?
No, absolutely not. They present these differing viewpoints as a key part of the community's modern reality. Understanding the terms is helpful because someone using Aramean versus Assyrian might be signaling a particular historical viewpoint. But for our look at Afrin, the focus stays on the actual historical and archaeological links between the region and the ancient Arameans and their Syriac Christian descendants.
Which brings us nicely to the physical evidence in Afrin itself. The sources say it's not just abstract history, it's written on the landscape.
Very much so. The landscape is full of witnesses. The sources describe Afrin as having been a real cultural and religious heartland, and the archaeological sites prove it. They show that whole transition from paganism to Christianity happening right there.
And the Ain Dara Temple is a major example.
A huge one. Just south of Afrin town, dates to the Iron Age, 1300 740 BCE, right when the Aramean kingdoms were flourishing.
What's so special about it?
It's this monumental basalt temple. Amazing reliefs, lions, sphinxes. But the most famous thing mentioned again and again in the sources are these colossal footprints carved into the floor.
Footprints, like giant footprints.
Yeah, about a meter long. The idea is they might represent the path of the temple's deity, and the sources also stress its striking similarities to descriptions of Solomon's temple in Jerusalem over 30 common features. It's a globally significant site that anchors Afrin deep in that ancient Aramean world.
Incredible. So that's the Aramean pagan past. What about the Christian era evidence?
That's where you get the dead cities, these amazing Byzantine era settlements in the limestone massif nearby. They date mostly from the 4th to 7th century CE.
And these were Syriac-speaking communities.
Yes, the sources describe them as settlements of Syriac Christians, giving us this incredible snapshot of early Christian rural life.
Like Fafartin.
Exactly. Fafartis has the ruins of a basilica. And there's an inscription dating it to 372 CE that makes it one of the oldest securely dated church buildings in the world.
Wow. 372 CE.
And its name, Fafartin, is apparently Syriac for fruit of the fig, another linguistic tie.
And Kfar Nabu, what's its story?
The name itself tells the story, Village of Nabu, an Aramean god. So it's clearly a pre-Christian sacred site, but what the sources highlight is that a Roman-era pagan temple there was physically converted into a Christian church around 398 CE.
You can actually see the conversion.
That's the description. It's a powerful symbol of that religious shift happening on the ground. Then there's Cyrus, or Nabihuri, a major Roman city, and by the 4th century, an important Christian bishopric. It shows the church wasn't just rural, it had institutional strength in the Afrin Valley, too.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Roj Bosch, Hannah.
Roj Bosch. Excellent.
Perfect timing, as always. Let's see. Sips. Oh, that's lovely today. Really nicely spiced. Not too sweet.
Yes. She's done a great job. It's really smooth. Maybe a little less sugar than sometimes, which I quite like.
Me too. Hits the spot. Okay, let's just take a quick moment to enjoy this.
Good idea.
Pause. Sorry.
Refreshed. So, we were talking about the incredible archaeological footprint in Afrin. Ain Dara, Fafartin, Kfar Nabu, Cyrus. But there's one more site the sources really emphasize, especially for his connection to a specific Christian community.
Yes, that would be Brad, ancient Kapura Brad. The sources describe it as a hugely significant Christian site because it's traditionally held to be the burial place of St. Meron.
St. Meron, the founder of the Maronite Church, the very same. Died around 410 CE. He was a Syriac-speaking hermit, sources say, of Aramean origin from that Cyrus region we mentioned. His followers, known as Beit Marun, the House of Maron, became the nucleus around which the Maronite Church developed.
And there are ruins in Brad, too.
Oh, yes. Substantial ones. The sources mention the Julianos Church, dated 399-402 CE. It was enormous for its time, one of the largest in northern Syria. And next to it, a smaller 5th century chapel or martyrium believed to be where St. Meron's sarcophagus or relics were housed.
So Brad is basically ground zero for Maronite history.
Absolutely. And it's not just ancient history. The sources make a point of mentioning a visit in 2010, just before the conflict. A delegation of Lebanese Maronite leaders came for the 1600th anniversary of St. Meron's death and officially declared Brad a pilgrimage site.
Wow, so a living connection right up to the present day.
It powerfully reaffirmed its role as a foundational place for a global Christian community with those deep Aramean Syriac roots in the region.
Okay, so putting all this archaeology together, Andara, the dead cities, Brad, the sources paint a picture of Afrin being this vibrant center of Aramean and Syriac civilization for, well, over a millennium.
The stones definitely tell that story.
Right.
But then, as we said at the start, the sources slam us back into that paradox when they look at the population numbers just before 2010.
A huge contrast between the depth of history and the demographic reality.
A stark contrast. The sources describe Afrin district then as overwhelmingly Kurdish in population. With a Christian minority that was, well, tiny.
What kind of numbers are we talking about?
The 2004 Syrian census put the district population around 172,000. Estimates for 2010 were higher, maybe over 500,000, but that likely included many displaced people who had already started coming to Afrin for safety.
And Syrian censuses didn't track ethnicity, right? That was the Ba'athist policy.
Correct. Officially, everyone was Arab, basically. But unofficially, and in the sources we consulted, Afrin was widely described as homogeneously Kurdish. Some Kurdish sources estimated it was over 97% Kurdish before the war, though other small groups were there too. Arabs, Turkmen, Yazidis, Alevis.
So where did the Christians fit in this picture?
They were a very small faction. The numbers in the sources vary slightly, but they consistently point to only a few hundred Christian families. Maybe 200 to 300 families total. That's roughly 1,200 individuals, maybe up to 2,000 at the higher end. Although some sources suggest many might have already emigrated by 2010.
Just a few hundred families in a district of hundreds of thousands. And were they spread out?
Mostly concentrated, it seems. Primarily in Afrin city itself, and smaller numbers mentioned in the sub-districts of Raho and Mabatli.
But even within that small number, the sources suggest some complexity, a dual nature.
Yes, that's a striking point. It wasn't monolithic. On one hand, you had a fairly recent group, ethnic Kurdish, converts to evangelical Protestantism.
Ethnic Kurds becoming Christian. In Afrin.
Yes, centered around a place called the Church of the Good Shepherd in Afrin City. Sources mention it being active just before and around 2011. The pastor apparently confirmed they were Kurdish families, holding services in both Kurdish and Arabic.
Okay, that's one part. What was the other?
The other part points to a more, let's say, traditional or historically rooted presence. Some sources mention things like 20 churches and ancient temples existing in the district, which suggests a Christian history far broader than just one recent church, echoing that archaeology we talked about.
Right.
There are also mentions of Armenian families having lived there, and allusions to a historical mix of different Christian denominations over time. Armenians, Nestorians, Orthodox, Greeks, Aramean Syriacs, Melkites, people who had coexisted there peacefully.
So remnants or echoes of that older, diverse Christian past still existed alongside the newer Kurdish converts.
That seems to be the picture. This duality is important. You had these small, perhaps residual, historical groups who represented a living, though very fragile, link back to the heritage of sites like Brad or Fafartin. And then you had the Kurdish converts, who shared the ethnicity of the majority, but were a religious minority with a different kind of connection to Christianity. Understanding this helps make sense of why different sources might describe the community in slightly different ways.
Okay, that clarifies the community structure. Now, how did they live? How did this tiny, complex minority group interact with the huge Kurdish majority, all under the shadow of the Syrian state?
Well, detailed sociological studies from that exact time are hard to come by, the sources indicate. So we're piecing it together from the context and regional patterns. The general picture seems to be one of pragmatic coexistence, often peaceful.
How so?
One concept the sources use is shared otherness.
Shared otherness, meaning?
Meaning relative to the Syrian state. The Ba'athist regime, as the sources reiterate, pushed Arab nationalism. It didn't officially recognize non-Arab groups like Kurds, and its policies were often discriminatory. In a place like Afrin, over 97% Kurdish, this state pressure was a primary source of tension.
Okay, that's the Kurds' position relative to the state. What about the Christians?
Christians, as a religion, were officially tolerated to an extent, but non-Arab Christians like Syriac Arameans or Armenians faced a double bind. Their religion was maybe okay, but their non-Arab ethnicity and heritage were expected to assimilate into the state's Arab identity.
So, in the eyes of the central government, they were other, too, just in a different way than the Kurds.
Pretty much. They share that status of not fitting the state's ideal mold. Now, the sources do acknowledge the very complicated, sometimes tragic, history between Kurds and Christians elsewhere in the region, like the Safo genocide. But focusing specifically on Afrin before 2010, this shared experience of being non-Arab others under an Arab national state likely fostered a degree of local tolerance, a kind of live-and-let-live approach.
It sounds like the Christian minority needed to tread carefully.
Absolutely. They were tiny. They couldn't afford conflict with the Kurdish majority, nor could they fully align with a state that didn't fully accept their non-Arab identity. So quiet integration into the local Kurdish-dominated society seems to have been the path of least resistance, the way to maintain stability.
Is there evidence of interaction, not just separation?
Well, the very existence of that Kurdish evangelical community suggests boundaries weren't totally rigid. It implies some level of social interaction and perhaps a lack of overt day-to-day hostility, at least in that period.
And this local dynamic, this relative tolerance, is that why Afrin later became seen as a safe place when the war started?
That's the argument the sources make. After 2011, Afrin received huge numbers of displaced people from all backgrounds, Arabs, Turkmen, others fleeing violence elsewhere. Its reputation as a relative safe haven wasn't random. It was likely built on this pre-existing local situation. Minorities were perhaps seen more as fellow others in relation to the state rather than immediate threats. The local priorities seemed to be stability, maybe buffering themselves from the central government's more divisive politics.
It paints a very layered picture of Afrin just before everything changed.
It really does.
So bringing it all together, the sources on Afrin before 2010 leave us with this powerful contrast.
Yeah, this deep, almost overwhelming historical legacy. An ancient Aramean heartland, a cradle of Syriac Christianity, a foundational site for the Maronites, all proven by stunning archaeology. Adara, Brad, Fafartin, Kefir Nebu, Cyrus.
All that history, existing alongside a demographic reality where the Christian community was, frankly, tiny and quite fragile on the eve of the conflict.
Exactly. A district that was overwhelmingly Kurdish, home to maybe just a few hundred Christian families, who themselves had that complex mix of ancient roots and recent converts.
That specific moment, just before 2011, seems so unique, so layered.
It was. A place that was simultaneously an ancient Aramean center, a key Maronite site, a hub of Syrian Kurdish culture, and part of the modern Syrian state, all layered together.
And, as the sources sadly note, the horrific events since 2011 have completely overturned that reality, that specific social fabric, that demographic mix. It's been largely erased.
Yes, the Christian community, according to reports, has been almost entirely displaced from Afrin now.
Which really highlights why digging into these sources, documenting that pre-war period, is so vital.
It's about preserving the memory of what was there. Capturing that lost historical baseline, remembering a small community whose presence, however small in number, was woven into millennia of history in that specific place.
It really makes you think. Considering that vast historical landscape of Aramean and Syriac heritage in Afrin, and then the small, complex reality of the community that actually remained before 2010, what does this history teach us about how the echoes of ancient civilizations persist, even when their direct descendants become a tiny, sometimes overlooked, minority?
That's definitely something to ponder.
Thank you for joining us for this exploration and into the sources on Afrin's history. We hope understanding this complex past offers some valuable perspective on the region. And perhaps it encourages you to keep looking for the layers of history that exist all around us, often hidden just beneath the surface.